happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be, across the United States or elsewhere. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. The end of November.
It's almost my anniversary. 19 years.
19 years. Wow, congratulations.
I'm very excited. I've been thinking about what we're going to do next year. I've been thinking about...
You've already hopped past this one?
Well, 20 just has such a nice ring
big.
To it.
20
know?
Is big, yes.
Yeah. We got married Thanksgiving weekend, which was really fun because it allowed more out-of-town people to be able
sure.
to come. And it felt like my birthday. Our wedding was like a Mardi Gras.
Oh, that's fun. But we are full headlong into holidays. You know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. I mean, it's like, this is it. This is the bustle. This is the hustle. It's starting to ramp up.
Do you have, like, a favorite Christmas tradition that you're already making sure this has to go on the calendar?
You know, we have a relatively new tradition.
Oh, I want to hear it.
Which I particularly like because I'm kind of a tightwad.
Oh, heavens.
Well, that's what happens when your kids get to college age. You're like, oh, geez. Anyway. We have this tradition where we don't get a Christmas tree until, like, the night or two nights before Christmas.
Oh.
Yep. And instead of going to some fancy cut-it-down-yourself Christmas tree or having a fake one, we go to Lowe's or Home Depot, and they have just, like, the last vestiges of
Charlie
any...
Charlie Brownie.
Yes, and they're, like, $5. So you can get these Christmas trees, like these six-foot Christmas trees for, like, $5. So we go out and we pick the best of what's left over, and so for some reason... We dig it.
And you keep it around a long time?
Not really a long time, because they're almost dead by the time we get them. So we keep them for a week or so, and, you know, by New Year's, they're gone. But we enjoy this night out, you know, instead of, like, being the, you know, the typical looking for the perfect Christmas tree and
yes.
having a big dinner. It's like, hey, let's hit up Burger King, head over to Home Depot, drop $5, and then we love it. It's...
Listeners, this is why. This is the Team Beth, Team Rob. He's the yang to my yang. This is like I'm already on today, November 23rd, thinking, how quickly can I get the tree up? How fast can I talk my husband to letting us have this thing up so that I can enjoy it every day?
At least in our house, what we learned when the kids were younger is that by the time Christmas got there, we were so tired of Christmas that we just wanted it to be over.
I'm so sorry for you.
That's exactly right. So we've sort of... waited a while until we fully engage in Christmas, and so a week ahead or so we really start jumping in.
So are you still eating your Halloween candy, and do you still have a pumpkin out front, and do you do things?
Well, that's less because of desire to do those things and more because we just don't clean up after ourselves. So yeah, I haven't noticed, but I'm sure the pumpkin is still on the... It's just like, yeah, we'll throw it away one of these days.
So you're like a...
But this is intentional.
You're like a...
This is... We are waiting on Christmas until it's close to Christmas so we can fully jump in instead of saying, oh my gosh, we've been doing Christmas for 5 weeks.
The worst roses on the night before Valentine's Day
wow,
for your
you're
wife.
You're killing me. You asked me if we had any traditions, and bam, I tell you one that we enjoy.
Okay, you
and you're killing me.
You can mock mine. One thing that I'm absolutely positively making sure happens in our schedule is Christmas caroling, which my kids have.
Oh my gosh.
They think that's ridiculous.
I would rather lose a leg.
My kids are like, we ring the doorbell, we make people stand there while we sing to them. The cold air is coming in their house. They have to what? Give us something, respond, sing back. What do we do? That doesn't make any sense. I don't care. I'm like, when you grow up, you don't have to do it. But while you're still a minor inside of my roof, you are going to Christmas carol with me.
If we had some way to take a poll, and maybe I'll try to figure it out on Facebook or some way to take a poll.
Would you rather
go Christmas caroling?
Yay!
Or would you rather go and pick out a relatively dying Christmas tree a couple of days before Christmas? Which of those? I'm guessing that I overwhelmingly win.
I don't think so.
Who wants to go Christmas caroling?
In fact, I think
you don't even win the people in your family. Your own family doesn't want to go.
Well, you know, I have multiple languages in my family.
Oh my gosh.
So my older girls, who English is their second language, and you know, now all these years later they've learned it, but the first couple years they had little cheat sheets so they could sing along in English.
Gosh.
So they don't just feel dumb.
I don't even know why you're talking about this in November. This is exactly my point. We're talking about Christmas traditions and it's Thanksgiving.
Are you gonna do Black Friday?
No.
No. We don't do anything.
Why would I do Black Friday?
Because
we just had last week Dr. Soley talking about anxiety, depression, and anger.
She also talked about helpful thinking.
I can't think of any day that would cause me to feel those emotions more deeply than Black Friday.
You should get in the go
depression,
that day,
anxiety,
pull out
and
your seven steps from
anger,
last week, and
anger.
Then put it right to the test right
no,
there.
Not happening.
Because, and then what would happen? Oh just exactly God. Like she taught us. You should just unfold those right there.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Hey, we have a good show today, despite our differences about...
I'm looking forward to today.
Yes. Charles Lee is somebody we've wanted to have on the show for a very long time. He's the CEO of a company called Ideation. He's written a book called Good Idea, Now What? How to Move Ideas to Execution. Very similar genre to Todd Henry, who's...
Yes.
My all-time favorite guest.
Until today.
And I don't know, maybe they'll be tied. But anyway, he's going to be on right after this segment. And then Jim Grassi has written a book, Guts, Grace, and Glory. It's a football devotional.
Uh-huh.
And what could be more
sports.
Apropos?
Here we are, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, you know, getting into all the college and pro football. So he's written a football devotional. The Fords by Kurt Warner.
Okay, speaking
I like
of
Warner.
Football.
Speaking of football.
You know, a couple weeks ago, there was a big story about there was a high school team that won 91-0.
Yes, I remember that.
And
we talked about it at the time.
No, we didn't. And there was a little bit of a chat.
Well,
about
I felt that we talked about it at the time. I thought the conversation was over.
What I remember was that you didn't agree with me. So it was still open-ended.
Okay.
So let's bring it to the table here
okay.
again. And
okay.
Some parent said that it was bullying. That
yes,
the
they actually filed a bullying report.
And then they ruled in favor of the team that
yes.
won 91-0.
Yes.
And the only thing that kind of convinced me that maybe it wasn't bullying is it sounds like the two coaches conversed multiple times during the game about how to keep the score as low as possible. And that made me feel a little bit better.
A little bit better. So you tend to lean to the idea that somehow the team that won big was somehow mean to the other team.
Yes. I do think that.
What should they have done instead?
I think somewhere around 45, which is like halfway there, they should have either said, would you like to call it? They should have said to their team, we're going to try, I don't know, some brand new play that nobody really knows the rules, so you don't really get the ball very far down the field. Something.
Well, I would say this, that if you had read the story, that,
I read it.
Uh-huh, that the team that won 91-0 did everything in their power not to score. Other than just take the snap and fall down, which would have been worse.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Well, maybe it's a guy thing. Maybe it's not a guy thing. Maybe it's a competitive thing, whether you're a guy or a girl or whatever. The worst thing that could happen is for people to say, we're not even going to try against you anymore. I mean, if you're the opposing team and it's 45-0 and they're just taking a knee, that's embarrassing. That's worse. To me, as an athlete, as a former athlete, that would be worse than losing 91-0.
Maybe I'm just thinking as the parent of an athlete.
And I would say, in addition to that, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth string person on the football team who rarely gets to see the field, do they get a chance to play?
I'm wondering if they did.
Yes, they played the entire second half. And what are you going to tell them when they played? By the way, don't try. No, these are people who practice blood, sweat, and tears like every other player. This is their chance to play. By the way, this is your chance to play. Just take a knee. No. So... I am winning this argument.
It does actually kind of sound that
Thank
way.
Thank you. I win.
It doesn't happen
this is
very
a...
often. Take the note down.
Ken the producer, Ken the sound guy, tape, leave this on tape, please, the archives, the only argument that I've ever officially won.
I think it's my Christmas gift to you.
On
early.
This show.
This is my early Christmas gift to you. Let's start celebrating right now.
This is the perhaps the best Christmas gift I will get, is for Beth to be relatively speechless on the other side and go, okay, maybe that's all right.
Oh, okay. The second best gift you get is when I come sing, away in a manger at your front door. Just so you know.
I will not answer.
Yes, you will.
I'm going to make you sing out there for hours.
I'll circle the house.
Hey, we're glad you're with us today, and I hope you'll stick around after the bottom of the hour and after this break as well. Charles Lee, CEO of Ideation. I mean, how do we get the CEO of Ideation on our show? Good idea.
You begged him,
exactly. Good idea. Now what? How to move ideas to execution. You're not going to want to miss Charles Lee, and he's going to be on in just 60 seconds. So stick around. We'll be back in just a minute.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back-to-Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back-to-Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shilaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday.
Pre-Thanksgiving Saturday.
Great Saturday, wherever you happen to be today.
Let's hope you're all on diets in anticipation of the Thursday that's to come.
Well, something's got to happen, that's for sure, at least in my house. I am so excited that Charles Lee is on our show. He's written a book, Good Idea, Now What? How to Move Ideas to Execution. If you don't know about Ideation, his company, you should, by the way. He is the CEO and chief idea maker at Ideation, an idea company that specializes in helping businesses and organizations build remarkable brands via innovative business design, organizational change architecture, brand integration, design, web, and marketing. Just reading that sentence makes me excited.
I'm just telling you.
It's like now we could have 5 hours worth of conversation just about that, but we're going to talk most about his new book. So, Charles, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Charles, I met you a couple weeks ago when we were both presenting at a conference, and I told you at that time how much I appreciated what you had to share and have since enjoyed reading your book. And I just wanted to give it a chance for our listeners to understand the principles of the book and about what you were talking about. So why don't you start by just telling us what is the book about and kind of what inspired you to write it?
Well, it was a pleasure meeting you as well. The book is, you know, like the title reads, Good Idea, Now What? And it's really, you know, living in a world full of ideas where ideas are a dime a dozen. Really, the book was written as these, like, bite-sized pieces of advice for people who want to go from inspiration to actual execution. One of my mentors often says, you know, if you want to find the greatest collection of human treasures on the planet, all you have to do is visit your local cemetery, because in it are buried, you know, books that were never written, songs that were never sung, business plans that could have changed economies in different cities, but that never took off because people chose to take ideas to the grave. So the book kind of walks you through these bite-sized pieces of advice from all different industries to help move your ideas forward.
Yeah, and lost in the introduction, which can sound so overwhelming when I introduced you and about these ideas of building a brand and organizational change architecture and all that. At the heart of this is a book for individual people, regardless of they're in business, or it's really about ideas that people have.
Yeah, so whether you are in a corporate setting, whether you are an entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to move things forward, maybe you're volunteering for your child's school, it's really designed because, you know, I took for granted a long time that people just knew how to execute their passions. But the reality is, if you look at the percentages of how many innovative projects actually fail within companies, I think it's the number in some statistics read over 90% of projects never really make it as they were designed to make it because it fails in some element of execution along the way. So the book, yeah, you're right, it's for not just for those in business, but people who just want to get in the habit of taking a concept and making it reality. That's kind of the heart behind the book.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were crafting the book, you had to been thinking about the kinds of things that stop people from their execution. And part of it is just our ignorance. You know, we don't really know how to take the ball farther down the field. But what are some of the obstacles that keep people from being able to see whatever it is that they're imagining come to life?
Yeah, probably one of the most common obstacles is some authors have called just kind of the creative resistance. Folks like Seth Godin and Stephen Pressfield call it the lizard brain, this part of your brain that kicks in when you're about to launch a new concept. And this part is almost a defense mechanism that internally kicks into gear when you're confronted with the reality of actually implementing something. Mm-hmm. And what it begins to tell you is all of these, you know, if you take a step back, really irrational reasons as to why you shouldn't move with your idea. And if you take a step back, it's kind of like this. If someone comes to you guys and says, hey, I have this idea. Here's what I think, how it's going to work. Here's how I'm planning to execute it. Here's what it's going to take. Most of us would probably respond in this kind of optimistic, hey, you can do it. I'm going to support you. I'll walk with you and so forth. But it's interesting when the tables are turned and when you're asking yourself whether or not you should go for something, we suddenly become really pessimistic. Or quote-unquote realistic about our own concepts. So this internal, like, defense mechanism kind of kicks in and trying to save face or, you know, not deal with disappointment. But the reality is probably, like, 9 out of 10 of those reasons why you shouldn't start are actually irrational. Like, you know, my boss is not going to like the idea. People are not going to think it's innovative enough. And the reality is that's probably not the case if you've taken time to really develop it.
So the best way to overcome that sort of defense mechanism, are there certain things that people can do to sort of get out of their own way?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I call it kind of an ideation paradox, and that is there's really the way you get over it is you start moving, and you'll start realizing that many of the hypothetical problems were just that, hypothetical. Mm-hmm. And it may be that also, you know, you talk with people, some entrusted people around in your life that, you tell them, hey, here's what I've worked on. So if it's like just kind of, you know, you're shooting from your hips and it's just kind of stab in the dark and you haven't thought about it, that's one thing. But if you've really kind of spent some time writing down some of the concepts and working and refining through it and then presenting it to people you trust, there's a good chance that they should give you a more of a realistic perspective than you may even have on your own abilities and so forth. So that's one way. But the other way is, like, really figure out, because often the questions you really need to be asking probably won't come to the surface unless you're already moving towards implementation. And that sounds kind of paradoxical. That's the reality of most ideas.
Right.
One of the chapters I found really interesting is the chapter about collaboration, because I'm always saying collaboration makes everything better. Yeah. What role does sharing your idea with a small group or a business partner, what role does collaboration play in getting our ideas actually executed?
Yeah, great question. I think on just kind of the formation before even getting to execution, the reality is most great ideas require more than one human being to participate. Because in most cases, and people like Stephen Johnson in his book, Where Good Ideas Come From, talk about this notion of this kind of hunch. We may have a hunch of an idea, and we actually need a hunch that lurks in the mind of someone else to come together to really shape it. So the idea is you may have a core concept, but you're going to need the ideas of others to kind of get it there. How that is done, I mean, some people may default to some type of brainstorming meeting, and there's nothing wrong with, like, brainstorming meetings, but also what studies have shown of late, Harvard recently did a research on this, and that is how much time we waste in brainstorming. So it's not necessarily productive. For example, I don't know if you guys are probably, are you guys more extroverted? I'm assuming you have a radio show.
Yes, we are.
You are. Well, you know, a lot of groups have, like, introverted folks that often, if you are, say, a manager of a department and you call a meeting and you've been wrestling through a particular problem or question for days, if not weeks, and you dump it on a room full of introverts, potentially, it becomes a very stressful environment, and ideas don't necessarily rise to the surface in the way that you may hope, maybe as an extrovert. And so some of the things that I talk about and what others have talked about recently is look, if you want to create an environment where ideas are refined and shaped together in a very collaborative setting, there needs to be planning that goes into it. There needs to be an on-ramp where, you know, maybe there are some who can think quickly on their feet about refining concepts, but there are others who need time alone, because that's sometimes their best avenue to creativity, is that they would come to the meeting prepared with some concepts. If you're going to collaborate on a concept, one is to understand who's in the room and how they best function in the realm of ideas and producing and refining it, and then working together towards it and leaving the meeting with some actionable steps. So it's both collaborating, but it's also solitude I think collaboration works really well. Sometimes when you give people time and space to think about it on their own, to bring something constructive back to the table where you can work together through it and be open enough to disagree. There's a chapter in a book called Fight Club, and it's this idea that ideas need refinement and friction and tension, and you have to be about the greater good of your group or your company in order to be open for constructive criticism.
I know there are a lot of obstacles standing in the way of people getting their idea to fruition. One that I really resonated in the book was to think multiple, not perfect. And often when I'm thinking of an idea, I think of it in as idealized form. And if it doesn't immediately become that, I kind of give up.
Yeah.
So is there some steps in there that can help people sort of, you know, back away from this perfected idea and instead think about what might be good enough next?
Yeah. I think that's a great point. I mean, the example I give in the book was the notion of years ago in the food industry, everybody was looking for like this platonic, perfect recipe for any category of food. So the idea was, how do you make the perfect mustard, the perfect spaghetti sauce? And what the data began to show through a couple of key consultants in the food industry back in the late 70s and 80s is that people have multiple tastes, and it's more about clusters and different perfect recipes, plural, that really impacted a market. So that's when you started seeing, like, you know, and there's over like 30-some different kinds of spaghetti sauce now, 12 different kinds of mustard, and all those kinds of things, because, you know, it would have been nice if the public response to taste was kind of more like a bell curve. But what the data showed is when it all came back from surveys and taste tests and blindfold tests and things like that, is people, different kinds of people wanted different options. And I think that's true of ideas too. So instead of asking, like, what's the best way I can get my new product or service to the market, you should reframe it to really ask, what are the best ways I can get there given the, you know, maybe the clusters of different types of people that would most benefit, instead of shooting for everyone, instead of saying there's one perfect way that fits every single mold. It just, we don't live in that kind of world anymore. It's like asking somebody, like, what's your favorite music? I mean, it kind of depends, right? Like, what mood am I in? Who am I with? What am I doing? And so in that kind of complex world, it's better to think in multiple solutions, multiple pathways, instead of looking for that perfect way.
One of the things when I heard you do your presentation that you talked about was kind of keeping time sacred in your day for creation, and then having other parts of your day that are more about production when you're maybe not, you're not optimal time. How important is it, do you think, to know yourself and to know your schedule and to be proactive versus reactive as you're trying to take an idea from into execution?
Yeah, I think it's vitally important, because I think there's a lot of time we waste because we are compromising the, you know, maybe some of the key hours of the day where we're most productive. Now, granted, you can't always control your time. There are certain maybe days, if not weeks, if not years. I mean, if you have a young child at home and you're trying to organize your schedule, it can be really difficult. So there may be seasons where you can't do this. But what I encourage is, at least on the days you can, or the seasons that you can control portions of your day, you have to guard it with your life. Now, not everybody's a morning person. I happen to be. So for me, the morning, like before noon, it's probably the most sacred, where I think my clients deserve my best time to do creative work for them, or, you know, different individuals that I may hire for a company, thinking in terms of, like, when are they optimal and how do we schedule life around that? So in those moments, we don't lose when they're at their best.
Right.
And so understand that type of self-awareness will save you a ton of heartache. It'll give you permission not to do busy work.
Right.
To say, that's my time, and I'm going to do my best to live in that space well.
Charles, can you join us just for a minute or two after the hard break?
Sure.
All right, great. We're talking with Charles Lee about his book, Good Idea, Now What? And just in the next 4 minutes, you're not going to go anywhere. We have a couple of additional questions. So this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just a minute.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Hope you're having a great Saturday wherever you happen to be today. Hey, we're having a great conversation with Charles Lee. He's the CEO of Ideation. He's written a book called Good Idea, Now What? Which I think is the $64,000 question for much of the American population.
You
at
just
this point,
isolated so. Half of our listeners because there's only a fraction of people old enough to remember that game show.
Yes, I'm a little bit too young for remember that show anyway. But anyway, thanks for being back with us, Charles. Thanks for coming back after the break. I know that that wasn't initially the plan, so we really appreciate it.
No problem. Good to be with you.
We got into a lot of the details in the book and some of our favorite parts of the book. kind of pulling out from a 30,000 foot view, our listeners are probably thinking, okay, that's really great for particular people. Why should I buy this particular book? Tell us why.
I think in life, I think it's one thing to be, you know, to have an idea or be passionate about anything you may be passionate about, but it's another whole different thing to really do the work it takes to bring those ideas to life. I'm sure you have done this. I've done this. I've had friends who do this where they keep talking about this great idea and how they can improve their community, their neighborhood, you know, their church, their, you know, careers. And the reality is very few people actually act upon it. So this book reminds us that it can be done. Mm-hmm. If we put aside excuses, whether they're generated by us internally or maybe there's some external factors that keep speaking this sense that we can't do it, the book really walks through, hey, here's actually a little bit of a roadmap on how you can move your ideas forward and some principles that are working regardless of industry mm-hmm. or background. So it kind of puts you in a place where it removes some unnecessary excuses as right. to why something can't be done.
Yes, and I have to confess, I love it. So if anybody out there listening, they want an endorsement other than the really, really big wigs that you have on the back cover of the book, they can say Rob Hall loved it.
That's right. That's
yeah.
for the listeners. In your bio, Charles, it says that you're the creator of several grassroots efforts, Ideation Conference, ID Camp, Freeze Project, Just One. I'm kind of curious what big ideas you have right now going on in your head that you're trying to take from idea to execution. You have anything coming up?
Well, right now our company continues to, we do all of these different kind of conferences and events on the side to kind of invest back into especially social entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I'm really fascinated right now in that space where the world of traditional like nonprofits are intersecting with the way that corporations are taking on the mantle of corporate social responsibility or innovation. Mm-hmm. And so we're still kind of in process, and we've been fortunate to be connected to really well-known brands, both in the for-profit as well as the not-for-profit space. So we're thinking of ways that what does this mean for business? What does this mean for the way that nonprofits are innovating and creating even maybe new revenue streams for them? So we're still in the infancy of those conversations, but we've been able to facilitate a whole lot of those over the last 4 years.
Well, we appreciate you. First of all, those sound very exciting, by the way. And we look forward to watching them come into execution. And maybe we'll have you back on the show at some point to share with our listeners as some of those ideas have unfolded and the things that you have gained insight in there that you could share with us. But thanks for being on today. We appreciate you coming in and sharing just your heart and wisdom in this area. I think that we all, how you started is how I want to finish. There are a lot of untapped dreams, ideas, songs, books, businesses, solutions that are trapped inside of us, and removing those obstacles and taking those to the next step is really exciting. So thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for giving me some of your time.
Absolutely. Thanks. Charles Lee, good idea. Now what? I mean, you can't hear from a better person to take idea to fruition than a guy like Charles Lee.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hey, and we're going to shift gears right away. Talk about two great guests, one show.
I mean,
you know, we don't have enough time.
I know.
Maybe we can go to 90 minutes.
Okay, it's a deal.
90-minute format or
it's
something. Because we have too many good people to talk to.
It's a deal.
Hey, Dr. Jim Grassi is going to be on our show right now. He's written a book called Guts, Grace, and Glory, a Football Devotional. And Jim has been a chaplain in the NFL with the Raiders and the 49ers, I believe, in the Bay Area there, both of those. And talk about taking an idea to fruition. He's written a book about a lot of his experiences, and so we are lucky enough to have him on the show today. So, Jim, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my privilege to be with you.
Oh, great. Tell us a little bit about I'm a huge NFL fan, and that makes me like a bazillion other people in the United States. And I really love the idea of hearing stories, not only about players, but certainly as a believer about Christian players. And that I can begin to watch with a different, not just about how good they are on the field, but I take an interest in their faith as well. Tell us a little bit about your experiences with the 49ers and the Raiders and the time you spent with those athletes.
Sure. I had the privilege years ago, because of my outdoor sports background as a Hall of Fame fisherman, record book hunter, to get into a chapel program. And at that time I was in ministry, using sports ministry as a bridge to connect with men. And one thing led to another, and pretty soon I was doing regular chapels for the 49ers. And then when Mariucci left, I went over to the Raiders, which was a closer location to my home, and spent several years working with them, and had the privilege of you know, mentoring several of the coaches and players. And it's kind of fun to share stories that aren't confidential, but nevertheless were never really made very public, from the locker room to the sidelines to the chapel services, and be able to share those with the readers, and help them to grow in their understanding, not only about football and some of the stresses and some of the unique situations there, but understand the deep faith of many of these men, like RG3, Drew Brees, Matt Hasselbeck, Colt McCoy, et cetera.
You know, Jim, I sometimes have the opportunity to speak at chapels for the NASCAR sport, and I have found that as I've interacted with NASCAR drivers and those that are Christ followers, that their faith plays a really integral role in all aspects of their job, as well as putting their wins and losses in a context. Is how have you found that faith played a role in the football athlete? How was it?
Well, Beth, that's a good observation. I think, you know, when you think about it, there's 4 million kids playing youth leagues or in schools, 4 million. And of those, only 50,000 will end up in a college somewhere. And of those, 1,700 make it to the NFL. So you're dealing with a very select group of people. Many of these guys have come from backgrounds that have been less than great. I mean, if we realize that in the United States today, 41% of the young people go to bed in a home where there's no biological father. And in the inner city and in some of your metropolitan areas, larger metropolitan areas, the statistics are even more skewed in a direction of not having good role models, good people showing what character is. So when you get into sports like football, where there's so many people that are coming from broken backgrounds, if you will, and suddenly they're getting millions of dollars and they have groupies and all the entourage that goes with the NFL, a lot of these guys really can't handle it. John Wooden said, sports doesn't build character, it reveals it. And I think that's a real good view on what's going on, because there is a crisis of character in the NFL and in society right now.
Yeah, I picked up in reading your book, Crisis in Character, and you began to talk about it there in the NFL. But I'd also love to hear what you think about how that has sort of played its way down. I work in a high school. I go to high school football games, peewee games. That crisis of character in the NFL seems to be rubbing off as you go down the road. So in a couple of minutes that we have left before the break, in the 1 minute before we have before the break, what do you see that happening? Do you see the effects of the NFL reaching down to kids?
Definitely. And in fact, I've received some phone calls on that very point from high school coaches or principals that are trying to deal with kids that have bad character and have done things that have really been negative.
Yeah. Jim, can you join us after the break?
You bet.
That would be great. We're talking with Jim Grassi about his book, Guts, Grace, and Glory, a football devotional. And I'm sure we'll hear some great stories right after the break, so join us in 60 seconds.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous, great Saturday wherever you happen to be.
We're talking about football at Thanksgiving week. It's perfect.
What could be better than that?
Exactly right.
Yes, absolutely right. We're talking with Jim Gressy about his book, Guts, Grace, and Glory, a football devotional. And I'd be interested, you know, like I said when we started, Jim, I love hearing stories of not only famous people or famous athletes or whatever, but people of faith within those places, you know, hearing their testimonies and things. What was your favorite part of putting this book together?
Well, it's kind of like choosing between your kids. there are 65 stories in the book, and there 9 of those are what we call cameo stories, meaning that these are selected athletes that we went more in depth in their background. Since Ladinian LT, as he was called, Tomlinson, recently retired, I think his story might be apropos because he is a an individual who made the right choices at a young age. And when we before we went to break, we were talking about some of the issues involved, how our role models in professional sports, whether it's baseball, football, golf, whatever, when they have a failure, it does impact others. And one NFL pro said to me, well, I didn't ask to be a role model. I said, well, by nature of the fact that you are a pro athlete, you are a role model. The issue isn't whether or not you want to be a role model. It's kind of what kind of role model do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And LaDainian Tomlinson had a lot of things thrown at him at a young age. His dad left home. You know, his mom was working several jobs. He was in sports, very athletic, but very small. And he was continually reminded how small he was and that he wouldn't make it in college sports. And he did. Had a great tenure there, and then the pros said, well, you know, you just don't have enough quickness, enough speed, don't think you'll make it here. And then this guy goes on to set all kinds of records, 5 times all pro, you know, had in 06 and 07 had rushing titles. And to hear his story and see his response and how he carried the mantle of his you know, sport, and he was that and is that great role model to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just to kind of go back for a minute, we have to remember what Proverbs tells us, that a good name is more important than wealth, riches, gold, anything. And
mm-hmm.
I try to remind the athletes that your name, your family name, is on your back. And when you leave sports, people aren't going to remember your records, but they will remember your legacy as far as your character.
Hmm.
And when you put all these stories together and you found the 65 that best articulated what your core message was, what were you imagining a particular reader that would be picking up this book? Who is it that you specifically wrote it for, and what is it that you hope that they take away from reading?
I would hope that they could take away the message that Paul gave us in Romans 2, 18 to 20. In short, what Paul says about character, he says, know God's word, be a guide to the blind, a light in darkness, an instructor to the foolish, and a teacher to the young. And, you know, Guts, Grace, and Glory, we designed the book to be a short read sort of thing, that you could pick it up and read for 5 minutes or so and hopefully be inspired and encouraged. We designed it to coincide with football season and also as a Christmas gift book. Mm-hmm. And folks can get it through Amazon or at a number of Christian bookstores. But, you know, it's a book, we hope, that will inspire people to seek God's will and purpose in their life and to grow in their character, to strengthen their character.
Yeah. Well, you stole my thunder as I was thinking. It not only is it well-written, not only is it good content, but it's put together well. It's a very attractive book, and I was thinking it'd be the perfect Christmas gift, certainly for people who love football, but more in general for people who are looking for, like you said, a good short read to encourage them and build their faith and character. So we could not be more pleased that you were on the show. We really appreciate it.
It's my privilege, and God bless both of you and people listening. You're in Texas, as I recall, and the Texans purchased this book in bulk and had a new cover put on it with their logo. And each of the members of the Texan team and their staff all have the book. So we were very excited to hear that.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like it's off and running. We so appreciate it. Best of luck with the book and blessings to you, Jim.
God bless you.
All right. Take care. Jim Grassy, there you go. That guy could probably tell a bazillion stories.
I mean
not only the 65 that go in here, but
a whole lot
probably
more.
65 that would never go in here.
He kind of strikes me as the kind of guy you don't want to cross. Like, you know, he's like you're in the locker room, and the football player's like saying,
well, I don't know about that.
I didn't mean that last night when I, I'm sorry that came out in the press. He kind of strikes you as like the wisdom of the man that says, you know what, son?
Yeah. Your name's
good
on the
name is a better
that's
than
right.
riches. Your family name's
right.
on the
back
of
your
jersey.
Like, get it together, bro.
I think he strikes me as that. Like, I'm not intimidated by your size, your name, your position.
It would be a tough gig. You know, it'd be one thing, I think, to be a chaplain at NASCAR. It's probably, any competitive thing. But the testosterone level in a football locker room, I can't imagine. Because those guys, really, their reputation a lot is built on how tough and mean and, you know, they can be. And so to bring the message of Christ to a culture like that, I mean, that could be a tough audience, trying to balance those two things.
Yes, I think that exact same thing. He just strikes me as someone that, you know, his word might be non-negotiable. And
you might have to do that. That would be a difference.
He'd
depending
be a
on
good
if,
profile of that person.
Yes, yes. Some great shows. I mean,
it's just in time. All this talk about athleticism is just in time for the Olympics that are coming up.
That is true. You know, it's only a couple months.
Are you watching the Olympics?
Of course I am.
Do you have a favorite Winter Olympic sport?
You
like those skiers, those ice skaters? Those?
I'm more of a Summer Olympics guy. I like basketball. That's a Summer Olympic thing. It's a winter sport in every other part of the world. I don't know why it's in the Summer Olympics, but I guess because it doesn't require snow or something.
Or maybe they're busy in the winter.
I'll tell you what I think my favorite is probably, and that's luge.
Really?
Yeah.
Even
it's just
though
craziness.
Really all you do is you watch them go whoosh.
Yeah, but they're going like 100 miles an hour on this dinky little sled. I mean, it's sort of like NASCAR in the way like you don't really want them to crash, but oh my gosh, if they do, and then it's like, oh my, it's like tension.
I know it is.
Right? As compared to many other sports that don't bring that level of tension.
What I like about Olympics is the coverage. I like the little behind the scenes stories.
Oh boy,
and
yeah.
I
should have guessed.
I like I actually am like, I don't really care what your sport is, tell me about who you are.
Yes.
I want to know your story. like everything else in life.
You know, it used to be, and now I hope our listeners are still here.
Of course they are.
It used to be that they would do one or two of those, and it'd be like, oh. But now every show is like, let's tell you the story behind the story. Kind of lost a little bit of its power for me.
We're now in an age where we know people's thoughts in 140 characters. We read each other's blogs.
Right.
We know what people had for dinner last night.
Right.
We want to know the story behind the story. It's our expectation.
It is our expectation. And thus, Jim Grassi's book, The Story Behind the Story, people that you only see out there on the field, you now get a little story about them.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I was saying is, like, I like to know who's on the Browns, you know, is a believer. Who is it that you're rolling your eyes
at
the
thinking,
Browns?
I couldn't even name one Browns player is what I was thinking, and I cannot believe we're friends.
You're killing me.
Do you have a very favorite, all-time favorite football player? Like, your bucket list if you can meet this person dead or alive.
Wow. What kind of question is that?
It's a big one.
You always come up with these questions like craziness.
Favorite football player.
When I grew up, my favorite football player was Brian Sipe. You don't even know who that is.
I don't, but tell
most
me.
Of America probably doesn't know who this. He was the quarterback
tell me the story
for the Cleveland
the story.
Browns in the 1980s, back when they were the Cardiac Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the quarterback, number 17. And I was like a middle school, going into high school guy, and the Browns were good and exciting, and he was the quarterback and lots of last-minute things, and he was always my favorite player.
Is he still alive?
Probably, I would think so.
Let us get him on the show. Maybe he needs to
talk would be,
to us.
It'd be really interesting to all of our listeners. Hey, we're going to listen to Rob talk to Brian Sipe.
Okay. We'll tell him he's on the show, and we won't really record it for anybody else.
Just for me.
We'll just get Ken, the producer, on.
Could you record this private conversation? Just don't tell Brian Sipe it's a private conversation.
I think that sounds like a really good idea.
I think that's a great idea for me to get sued or something. I don't know. Can I tell you my most embarrassing moment ever?
Uh-huh.
Oh, we only have 2 minutes, but here it is.
Okay, tell me.
So when I was – basketball is my sport. I was a kid, and Mark Price was my favorite player. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's out there listening.
Okay, I've heard
that
of him.
That would be awesome. Mark Price, my favorite player. I was in Hilton Head on vacation, and I saw him walk by. And nobody on the planet would know because he was like a six-foot, you know, skinny guy, right? But I knew who he was. Anyway, long story short, I was like, that's Mark Price. I told Christine, that's Mark Price. And she's like, no, it isn't. She goes, okay, if that's him, go talk to him. So I'm like, okay, because she challenged me. So I ran after him because he walked by, and I got up to him. And you know how in your mind you're like you rehearse a conversation so you don't sound like an idiot, right? Well, I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
So I get up to him. I'm like, hey, are you Mark Price? And he says, well, yes, I am. And I had nothing because I hadn't rehearsed anything.
Yeah, you remember the last minute
and,
at that one
nothing.
Game.
Like, you know, like, so all I could say was, I really like you.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure. He kind of shook my hand. I'm a grown man at this point. I'm 25 years old.
And he's feeling like
and
so
he's,
good.
No, he's like, well, that's nice to hear. And he shook my hand and left.
Was he with someone?
Like, no, he's by himself. I'm an idiot. Anyway, one of my life's most embarrassing moments right there.
But you got to meet him.
I did, but not in the way that I had hoped.
Okay.
So much stuff. Okay. I could write my own book. Instead of 65 really great stories like
just
Jim Grassi,
guts,
it'd be 65 idiot stories of a story of my life.
No.
Hey, we hope you had a great time today. We had a great time today. We'll be back next week. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And until then, have a great
week. Share your embarrassing stories.
Have a great week.
One with another today.
See ya.